due to the Israeli restrictions. Israel is pursuing policy aimed at destroying our economy and making us isolated from the world. We demand an urgent help to export our crops to the West Bank and abroad.
Palestinian farmers and traders also expressed the crossing closure as an aggressive act that reflects Israeli insistence on besieging 2 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
By depriving us of exporting our crops, Israel intends to create chaos in our life. This has already affected our economy and made our life harder. I don't see any promising future for my family.
In light of the Israeli closure of the only crossing in the Gaza Strip, Palestinian farmers and traders who depend on exporting crops for a living are calling on the international community to make action and stop these restrictions that cause serious financial losses. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Thousands took to the streets of Brussels on Sunday to try and apply pressure on heads of governments in the EU to be more decisive when it comes to climate change. It was the biggest protest of its kind since the coronavirus pandemic took hold in the 27-nation bloc.
There's a sense of urgency between young people, elderly people. We are the grandparents for the climate.
There is no plan B. Actually, this is the moment to change our habits.
You are young and you change the world. And I'm here for change the world.
Droughts, fires, tornadoes and floods hit regions around the world during the summer, and scientists say fuel emissions are to blame. There was plenty of criticism handed out to EU leaders during the Brussels event.
Our politicians are not... Don't seem to be hearing what we say.
Since the first marches, the political language has changed a bit, but not enough at all.
All these people in the street are necessary to tell politicians, be ambitious, because we're going to vote for you.
They're waiting too long. We have to agree with a lot of different countries.
Campaigners warn there will not be many more next generations if greater impetus is not applied to dealing with the crisis, particularly from big carbon emitters like the US, EU and China.
We have to work together, Europe and the whole world.
We should have been here more people to show that we all want change.
With my friends, we're studying in science. We want to fight and change the consequences of the past.
Referring to oil and gas, they chanted, "Keep it in the ground." Doing so might be unjustifiable in the context of economic growth and social inclusion, many analysts argue. That's because for decades, the richest countries have become richer through the use of fossil fuels. Now developing nations are being told not to do the same by world powers. These poorer countries are saying, fair enough, but you must compensate us financially. World leaders are being urged to tackle this very issue head on when they meet at the end of the month for a 12-day UN climate change summit in Glasgow, Scotland. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Following the Americans' failure in Afghanistan, now the Taliban are rolling over Kabul and other cities and provinces across the nation. New messages painted on the walls in the city center are a reminder of visible changes. Our nation has, with the help of God, defeated America. One of the new Taliban slogans reads, replacing the previous colorful painting. The Afghan flag has largely been replaced with the white Islamic Emirate emblem, with many selling the new banners amid heavy traffic across the city.
After the Taliban takeover, I started selling the Taliban's flags and slogans. It is a good business for me. Many Taliban soldiers and their followers buy and display them on the cars, motorbikes and houses. I make good money and it is getting better day by day.
Another challenging change, the level of poverty is rising. Women are selling their gold to get some cash to support their families. Many have lost their jobs, with some struggling to make food for their family. Others are selling household items to make ends meet.
I've brought my household items for sale because there are no jobs. What should we do for a living? I asked the Taliban to create jobs. They must prepare the ground for us to work. Today we are selling household items. What should we do tomorrow?
The most obvious change is the presence of Taliban members themselves. The Taliban are seen roaming the city, guns flung over their shoulders. Some are wearing uniforms and some are in local clothes. And another change, many women are seen to be staying off the streets, but some are seen in longer coats and headscarves, and some in the all-covering burqa. Fewer men are seen wearing Western dress as they have switched to local clothes. The Taliban takeover changed the face of capital Kabul in many ways. The nation's already flagging economy is collapsing and creeping chaos is in the making. It remains to be seen what future holds for the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
London is now hosting the biggest and most expensive Islamic exhibit, which focuses its entire attention to the life and legacy of the cousin and son-in-law of Islam's holy prophet Muhammad. The Imam Ali exhibit takes viewers on an interactive journey through the life of Ali ibn Abi Talib, whose loyal service helped create a lasting and perfect religion. Imam Ali is beloved by all Muslims across the globe. For Sunnis, he's revered as the fourth rightly guided Khalifa, but for Shias, he's the first holy Imam. This exhibit offers an exciting and unique opportunity for the community to reconnect with one of Islam's most important historical figures, but also for viewers to learn more information about the life of this character, including things which may have been forgotten historically. Run by the Legacy Group, the creators told Press TV they hoped retracing the life of Imam Ali in full will leave visitors with a renewed connection to this Islamic legend.
So we believe that Ali ibn Abi Talib is one of the most amazing characters in history. He appeals to a wide audience. He famously said that he's a person that either your brother in faith or your equal in humanity. His letter to Malik al-Ashtar, which is his governor in Cairo, was referenced by the United Nations as being a reference point for the Arab leaders of the world because he was so adamant on justice, on social equality, on fair governance, on non-corruption. And his life as a leader in 4.5 years epitomized and personified that. So our appeal is to share this information with a global audience to come and visit and to see this place.
The exhibit is clearly a roaring success, with hundreds visiting each opening day. Organizers say that expansion plans are in motion, and they intend to remain open for the foreseeable future, meaning that Imam Ali's legacy continues to inspire even outside of traditional Muslim homelands. Robert Carter, London.
Yemenis have held an event in front of the As-Sala al-Kubra community hall in Yemen's capital Sana'a to commemorate the fifth anniversary of a massacre committed by the Saudi-led coalition in 2016. Participants condemned the international silence toward this brutal crime, saying when it comes to Yemen, the West continues to show its double standards. Abdusalam Amir is one of those who were present during the attack, where he got injured.
On that day, the sheikhs of the Nihim tribe and I attended to offer condolences to the Al Ruwaishan family because of our relationship with them. I was sitting there when the unexpected happened, a terrorist crime that killed and injured more than 700 of the best men of Yemen. This criminal act does not differ from the terrorist operations carried out by the coalition of aggression in all cities of Yemen over the past years, and the source of all these crimes is the extremist Wahhabi ideology led by the House of Saud.
On October 8, 2016, Saudi warplanes targeted the As-Sala al-Kubra community hall in Sana'a with at least two air-dropped munitions during a funeral ceremony. Over 140 people were killed and more than 600 others were injured in the attack, according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs.
People here say the bombing of the funeral ceremony at the As-Sala al-Kubra community hall revealed the brutality of the Saudi-led coalition against Yemenis. They say Riyadh's crimes will never be forgotten and Saudi Arabia should be brought to justice for its crimes. Abdulatif al-Washali, Sana'a.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kaveh Tahwai. Iran has said that its military drills send a message that Iran is ready to confront any threat against the Islamic Republic. Why would Iran conduct military drills on such a vast scale? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the message that these drills send, especially to Iran's adversaries like Israel.
Meet Joshan, an Iranian missile system that hunts down any hostile target flying in low altitudes. This and a range of other homegrown military hardware were deployed to this air defense maneuver, dubbed Defenders of Velayat Skies. Held in Iran's sprawling central desert, the drills were staged jointly by the Iranian Army's Air Defense and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Aerospace Division to bolster the country's defensive capabilities.
In this drill, we've launched an integrated air defense network which brings together all of the capacities of the Army and the IRGC's air defense units. The two military forces need to work in coordination with each other to ensure the security of Iran's skies.
The joint drills send a message that Iran's armed forces join hands and stand strongly to confront any threat against our land and our ideals.
The two-day maneuver simulated real-life combat scenarios where Iran's sensitive facilities are the target and must be protected using indigenous air defense systems. The Army's Majid and the IRGC's Desfoud were among the new generation of missile systems that were unveiled and successfully test-fired in the drills. The domestically built systems were assigned to intercept inbound cruise missiles targeting Iran's nuclear sites. Officials say the maneuver has been a success, and this means Iranian homegrown weapons can defend the country's skies.
Today, we're capable of ensuring the security of our borders using military hardware that are designed and produced by our experts. Today, we do not rely on foreign weapons, and our cutting-edge equipment meets all of our defensive needs.
The armed forces also tested their electronic defense capabilities using their latest radar systems, including this newly developed GOTS radar. Built by the IRGC's Air Defense Force, GOTS is a pulse Doppler radar that can track and determine the location and speed of any target flying within a range of 500 kilometers and an altitude of 90,000 feet. Military officials say the country's self-sufficiency is thanks to decades of U.S.-imposed arms embargoes that led Iran to a point where it no longer needs to import defense equipment. Phase of the maneuvers, and the Iranian air defense says all of the set goals have so far been achieved successfully. Officials say one of the major goals was to show that Iran's security is not tied to foreign arms, and the country's skies are safer with homegrown weapons. Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drills.
Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. We have Said Mohsen Abbas. He's a journalist and political analyst joining us from London. Also joining us is John Busnish, journalist and political analyst, who joins us from Belgrade.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, I'd like to welcome you both. Let me first start with you, if I may, John Busnich. You're looking at these military drills that are rather vast in scale and scope. Some of the details, these involve air defense units, domestically developed military hardware, and there were joint aerial maneuvers, another important highlight, that was attended by Iranian air defense divisions of the Army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC. Why do you think Iran is holding these military drills in this scope at this point in time?
Well, obviously, Iran is under serious pressure and threat of violent attack by not just the United States, but by the American ally in the region, Israel. There's also threat of involvement with Saudi Arabia. So this is a natural response on the part of the Iranian armed forces to protect their sovereign domestic territory. And it's obvious from your drills that these are domestic defense drills. It looks far different from an aggressive military practice. I see nothing wrong with this. This is the same type of maneuver that has been practiced in countries all around the world in every region. Nothing wrong with it, and no reason not to continue it. And the important thing that I've noted with your development in Iran is that your systems are homegrown, self-made systems, which makes you impenetrable to arms sanctions, which is one of the first methods that the United States uses to bring a target country to its knees. So I see nothing wrong with this. This is strictly in accordance with international law, and it's a natural element of the sovereignty of Iran.
So, Mohsen Abbas, war games or military maneuvers are most noted not just for the equipment, but the messages that it sends. Looking at one aspect of this, which is what our guest there pointed out, John Busnich, talked about the indigenous capabilities. And we're looking at air defense missile systems, radars, reconnaissance equipment, electronic warfare devices, communication systems, visual surveillance network, just to name a few. Again, all indigenously made. What message does that send?
Well, it sends a message that Iran is totally unreliant on external forces for its self-defense. That is thanks to the American embargoes, ironically enough. It's the sanctions that the Americans have placed persistently over four decades, which have, in a way, made it absolutely no-brainer for the Iranians to develop their own. But I think it's not to be underestimated just how brilliant the development of those indigenous weapons has been as an achievement for Iran, a nation which wasn't able to get its hands on information or even industrial parts, etc. For them to have achieved this self-sufficiency is incredible. In fact, it's got to the point where Iran is now ranked openly as the 14th most powerful military nation in the world, certainly, and it's also ranked in the upper echelons in terms of design technology. So, for instance, with certain mobile missile systems, they're even ranked number two. So this is an incredible sort of achievement by any stretch of the imagination in terms of the weapons that Iran can now use. And it's the main and sole reason, I think, that the Israel and the Anglo-Zionist imperialist forces haven't attacked Iran. They really would like to as a matter of urgency, but they dare not because they know that this is not dealing with a nation that will not be able to defend itself. They know it's perfectly capable of defending itself. And it's, of course, one of those populous countries in the Middle East, and it boasts now, as I argue, if in the Middle East, the largest armed forces in the region with over 1 million active reserve personnel as well. So that's significantly eclipsing all other regional militaries except for those of Turkey and Egypt in the region.
John Busnich, the IRGC commander, he has said a very important statement here. Again, we need to make sure that we cover this, which is why I have to ask you what you think. And he has said that the invariable message of unity between the IRGC and the Army in their duty to serve the country's defense. He said it was rooted in the dual forces' defensive cooperation during the Western-backed imposed war that former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein waged on the Islamic Republic from 1980 to 1988. This dual cooperation of the IRGC and the Army is important. But when he went into the context of during the time that Iraq attacked Iran, does that show, as you mentioned in the beginning, that Iran is getting prepared because it feels that there are scenarios that it may be attacked?
Well, I think that the saber rattling from Washington, both during the Trump era and now during the Biden era, is the same. And unfortunately for Iran, the Israel lobby inside America has a great influence on American foreign policy. Not only do they cooperate on arms development and regional military, let's say, coordination, the Israel lobby in the United States actually pays for the election of many members of Congress who therefore push a military agenda against Iran. So you're not dealing just with the United States' general imperial attitude towards countries around the world. You're dealing with a focused initiative from Israel in your own region. And given these circumstances and given the history of the American use of puppet regimes, as they did in the case of Iraq, to attack you from the side, I think that there's no doubt whatsoever that Iran is pursuing the rational, logical, and strictly legal approach of defending its own sovereignty. And I want to underline here that there are many people in the world that don't realize that the United States of America has invaded more countries than Nazi Germany invaded. This is not a joke. When you've got the President of the United States first initiating economic war on your country, which has gone on for years in the form of economic sanctions, then embargoes on a routine, normal supplies that have nothing to do with weaponry, and the coordination of battle plans with regional powers around you, and especially with Israel, you have absolutely no choice but to prepare to defend yourself. To do anything else would be suicidal.
Okay, so let's look, say, Mohsen Abbas, at through your eyes, what Israel is thinking first. Israel has made numerous threats against Iran militarily, and yet you have these types of exercises taking place. This particular one that has spanned now for 2 days, very significant. I'm looking again. I won't tell you how many sheets of paper I have that talk about the different options that Iran has, the different military capabilities, like the Quds radar capable of locating targets at a range of over 500 kilometers and at an altitude of over 90,000 feet. So when Israel views this, what is it thinking?
Well, Israel is thinking its days are numbered. The truth is that Israel's entire, if you like, menace was this sense that you couldn't penetrate their Iron Dome, that their army was invincible, that they were capable of striking anywhere, anytime, any place, and they used to. They did it with the Iraqi nuclear facilities once upon a time. They hit all sorts of places in Syria. There was the time when they would do that very comfortably. They're still doing such things where they know there's no comeback. But you see, Iran is not Syria, and Iran is not Egypt or any of these other nations, be they puppet or minor opposition to Israel. Iran is a fully capable military power with an ideology and an absolute powerful core leadership, which has a real commitment to moral politics, towards justice, and towards really fighting for the oppressed in that region. That's something that Imam Khomeini left as a legacy, and it is continued by the Rehbe Mukawama with the leader of Iran, maintaining that sense that Iran doesn't just have a responsibility internally to defend itself, but it also has a moral obligation to protect and to help those oppressed people in the Middle East, who for decades and decades have been violated, their sovereignty, their rights, their humanity, their lives, the political prisoners, left, right, and center, all being captured by the proxies of Israel, like Saudi Arabia, etc. I call them openly Zionist proxies. United Arab Emirates have declared it openly. The Bahrainis have declared it openly now as well. The Saudis are just not fully coming out with it. But you see, Iran stands tall within all this, with this, its military capability. It was the mistake that Gaddafi arguably made as well, because he dropped his guard, didn't build up his military effectively, and you saw what NATO and the Americans did to Gaddafi not so long ago. You saw that also within the Saddam regime, in fact, it was his weaknesses militarily, which they also exploited. This is what the Anglo-Zionist Empire does, whether it is its own lackeys or whether it's opposition. It looks at the military power and judges whether it should attack based on that. Iran has the Zulfqar short-range ballistic missiles. It has the Qiyam-1 longer distance, sort of 466-mile range missiles. The Fateh 313, which actually knocked out the American base after the assassination and murder, the extrajudicial killing of Lieutenant General Soleimani, was another example of just how powerful Iranian ballistic missiles have become. And this is what Israel is looking at. Now, Israel is nonetheless trying to do things to cause problems. Firstly, in the last month and a half, we've seen it visibly come in the open front line in the north of Iran, on the borders where Azerbaijani territory exists. They openly started trying to get their own corporations there stationed in Nagorno-Karabakh and the borders of Iran. Iran has given them an answer with an exercise there as well. That was one example. The other, of course, is that in northern Iraq, there's another border which the Kurds tend to have, the Kurds of Iraq have with Iran. And again there, we've noted that terrorist groups, Kurdish terrorist groups, have tried to make incursions. And these terrorist groups are backed and financed by the likes of Israel and America and the Western powers in order to see if there's a vulnerability and weakness in the northern defense of Iran. Iran's exercises there, I think Fateh Khaybar exercise was another indication that Iran is not going to take any nonsense with these maneuvers that Israel is initiating. Of course, Iraq is still very much infiltrated by Israel and America, occupied by America, essentially. So that side of the Iranian border is also not 100% secure. And we've seen, of course, with the fall of Afghanistan, yet another front potentially opening up for Iran with the return of what I call the neo-Taliban. There's no real guarantee as to which way the neo-Taliban will ultimately fall, depending on their sort of economic circumstances and also the attitude of Pakistan, which is very, very critical. Perhaps I'll go into that in your next question. But the eastern border of Iran and the western border of Iran are equally, if you like, in need of massive attention. And this is what Iran is showing with these maneuvers.
So I don't get it, John Bosnis. You have Israel that has threatened Iran militarily, has attacked Syria, has attacked Iran's nuclear facilities. You have Iran that has said the U.S. has relocated, based on information that Turkey gave, Daesh terrorists into Afghanistan, so there's instability perhaps that's going to come from there. You also have the situation, as our guest there mentioned in Erbil, regarding the Turkish terrorists there in the form of PJAC. And, of course, the U.S. military threats that have come here and there. And yet Iran is made out to be the bad guy by the U.S. How is that?
Well, I mean, that's standard demonization. If you plan to take a military act against another country, first you have to demonize them in the eyes of the world. So you tell any number of lies, you make any number of claims that are necessary to restrict international support for the rule of law. Because unfortunately, the way propaganda works is that if you can make the target country appear to be so evil that there is no, that they don't even have a right to international law, then you have a free hand to bomb them, to invade them, to overturn their regime, to run a color revolution, to do any of the panoply of illegal acts that are now the standard course in the American empire. So Iran has to not only defend itself, not only have its own independent weapon systems, not only practice those weapon systems, but it also has to pose a serious response threat within the region. Because if the American forces and their allies locate just outside of Iran's borders, Iran has to have local regional safety. So I think that the next step now for Iran, now that it has demonstrated a military capacity to defend itself, is to work solidly to strengthen your ties with especially Russia and China. If Iran can arrange even limited military exercises in cooperation with Russia and China, I believe you'll have the security that you need to protect your country. These are important aspects, and of course there will be efforts by America and by Israel to infiltrate agents and disruptors inside Iran, but I trust that Iran's domestic security services have got that under control. Now you need to look to the world, you need to look to the UN, you need to look to the World Court, and you need to tighten as much as you can your cooperation with the two superpowers which are not going to allow you to be attacked, and that's Russia and China.
Sure, but it was very interesting, Seyed Mohsen Abbas, when the U.S., very tired saying, the use of other options or all the options on the table type approach here. The interesting part being that you have the U.S. Secretary of State making that statement in the presence of the Israeli Prime Minister and also the Emirati Foreign Minister. And I'm going to quote what Israel has said. If the Iranians don't believe the world is serious about stopping them, they will race to the bomb. Israel reserves the right to act at any given moment in any given way. The part that is interesting is that the UAE is not too far away from Iran. So if a war does break out, the UAE in one way or another might be geographically in that war somehow. So I'm curious what the UAE foreign minister thinks when Israel makes and levels that type of threats against Iran when it has formalized its so-called relationship with Israel.
Well, the UAE has unfortunately made a heinous decision for its own people. They've literally opened the doors to Israel to come in and take over the UAE, and it's pretty much happening right before our very eyes. And of course, part of that doing the deal with Israel has also meant that they're actually allowing them to become a military threat to Iran, not so far away. So yes, it's already been said very clearly that the UAE is very much going to be on the front line if anything happens to Iran. It's very much within the sights of the Iranian military. Now, the reality is that the Americans are there in Bahrain with their Fifth Fleet, and right. They've got all sorts of other aspects. But the fact of the matter is that UAE is, along with its neighbors, very much antagonistic. And we've got these two wings building up now, the Eurasian bloc and the Anglo-Zionist or Anglo-American bloc, which is building up. And Iran is very critical within all of that scenario.
I got to unfortunately jump in and say, Mohsen Abbas, I'm sorry, just to give 30 seconds to John Busnish because we're fresh out of time. John Busnish, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi, his slogan to build relations with the neighbors. Iran and Saudi Arabia are almost at the brink, according to some outlets, not confirmed, they might even open up their embassies. And yet the U.S. rhetoric is turned up against Iran just with what happened tonight and recent statements. It doesn't go together. Do you think it's because of that the U.S. is reacting this way?
That's certainly a factor. Any advance in Iranian diplomacy in the interests of maintaining regional peace is diametrically opposed to the American and Israeli war plans.
Okay.
So by simultaneously defending yourself and opening your doors to friendly relations is your safest option.
Thank you for that, John Busnish, journalist and political analyst. And thank you, Seyed Mohsen Abbas. Sorry to have jumped in there. Journalist and political analyst from London.
Sure.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
Tourism. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the 12th episode of our series, Health Tourism. In this episode, we are going to take you to the island of Kish in southern Iran and introduce you to the super specialty acute care hospital known as Kish Hospital. Please stay tuned. Kish is one of the islands in the Persian Gulf in southern Iran that extends from the north to mainland Iran, from the east to the Strait of Hormuz, from the south to the United Arab Emirates, and from the west to Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. The area of Kish Island is 91 square kilometers with 43 kilometers of beautiful coastline. Kish Island is covered with palm, mesquites, jojoba, eucalyptus trees, and like any other island, it has a humid climate. Most of the rainfall in Kish Island occurs in winter and is usually in the form of showers. There are four regions in the world that have a high percentage of pure oxygen, and Kish is one of them. According to history books, Kish Island has been an integral part of Iran since the Achaemenid period, that is over 2,500 years ago. The island has been Iranian territory ever since the Achaemenid, Parthian, and Sasanid eras, and was the focus of attention of many governments throughout Iran's history. During the last century, special attention has been paid to this island, and since 1982, it has been known as the first free economic zone of Iran. The island's economy is mainly based on tourism and trade. Kish Island, due to its unique beauty, is one of the main tourist destinations in Iran. The island attracts not only domestic travelers, but also a large number of foreign tourists. It has an international airport, the construction of which kicked off in 1968 by the Urban Planning Department in Kish. The engineers and architects who commissioned the airport borrowed some ideas from the construction of airports on the Hawaiian Islands and the southern shores of the Mediterranean to build this facility of Kish. The airport has four different terminals that serve both domestic and international flights at the same time. On average, more than 1.7 million tourists visit the island annually and enjoy the city's leisure facilities. Among the tourists and historical attractions of this city, we can mention the traditional cistern, the Greek ship, the underground city of Karis, the historic city of Harire, and so on. Water sports are also very popular in Kish, and the island has a history of hosting a volleyball world tournament every year in its sporting calendar. Kish Island has a significant position within Iran's tourism industry. This has led to more attention being paid to the existing potentials in the field of medical and healthcare tourism on the island. At present, Kish Island is equipped with a super specialty acute care hospital called Kish Hospital, which offers a wide range of medical services to both residents and tourists on the island. Kish Hospital has been operating since 1993 with 32 beds, and in order to develop the hospital in 2013, the third phase of the hospital was opened and the capacity of the hospital was upgraded to 64 beds. The hospital has succeeded in attaining many honors in accreditation evaluations of Health Ministry in 2015, including receiving first-class hospital title, a first ranking in medical diagnostic labs, as well as the first in the ranking of intensive care, that is CCU, ICU, from Iran's Ministry of Health. Kish Hospital is also a general hospital, which offers all specialized and subspecialized services, including orthopedics, knee and knee replacement surgeries, neurosurgery, ENT, as well as all cosmetic and gynecological surgeries. In addition to the hospital's medical wards, laser therapy, endoscopy and colonoscopy, physiotherapy, ethnocardiology, cardiac rehabilitation, stone crusher, bone density measurement, dialysis, pharmacy, and a 24-hour lab services are provided in this state-of-the-art medical complex. The hospital is also equipped with an isolation room, which is approved by the World Health Organization, WHO, and is used for hospitalized patients with respiratory infections. Kish Hospital also provides medical services to foreign patients traveling to Kish Island. Appropriate medical infrastructure in Kish Island has provided the possibility of offering appropriate specialized medical services to foreign patients. Therefore, Kish Hospital has launched its International Health Department for several years in order to develop health tourism and has so far admitted patients from many different countries such as the United States, Bahrain, Kuwait, Uzbekistan, and Oman, etc. The satisfactory quality of medical services in this hospital, affordable cost, the presence of specialized doctors, and the lack of the need to obtain a visa have made this hospital quite popular among foreign patients. The VIP ward of the hospital has three suites and provides the necessary amenities for the patient's family to stay with the patient. This section is staffed by experienced and fluent nurses in several foreign languages, including English, Arabic, Turkish, etc. The VIP area is designed in a way that the patient feels at home and has all the amenities. In order to develop the health tourism of the island, Kish Hospital has established an office in Muscat, Oman, called Kish Hospital, and in addition, it intends to open an office in several cities of Afghanistan. By this way, patients can refer to the hospital offices in their country and obtain the necessary information about the hospital and doctors before traveling to Iran. In the presence of international patients, services are provided completely VIP, whether in their checkups and patients and in their admission and discharge or in hospitalization, completely VIP services are performed without wasting any time. Two translators fluent in Arabic and English are present at the hospital during the admission process, hospitalization, and after the patient is discharged, follow-up of patients is done through phone calls, WhatsApp, and email, and in case of any problems, the hospital will respond and follow up on the issue. Kish Hospital has held extensive negotiations with airlines and facilitator companies in order to promote health tourism, following which contracts have been signed and offices have been set up in Oman. So far, Kish Hospital has been able to be one of the top five medical centers in this field in the Summit and International Tourism Exhibition of Islamic Countries. In hospital grading and international standards, many measures have been taken in order to obtain international standards and approvals. Dear listeners, that was the 12th episode of our series, Health Tourism. Until our next program, goodbye and God bless.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.